What is weird?
My ex-girlfriend, my current girlfriend, and now my ex-wife are all in the same place. That's weird.
Cut the negativity, man. That's awesome. You're talking about three women that you've shared love with. That's a beautiful thing. How are you whining about that? Don't make this about you. It's about Allie. And one day, you'll be up there performing on Star Search, and you'll get 3¾ stars, and you'll win, and Sinbad will be the one frowning that day, and we'll all be here on your side, laughing for you.
You got rid of your TV a long time ago, huh?
No, I just moved to a place without any electricity.
TBTL!
Here's a sentence I never thought I'd say, but if you thought a sausage couldn't really hurt anyone, frankly, think again.
By the way, I'm a dentist. Okay, so I read body language very, very well.
My mom told me if I wait for things, like, good things will happen to me, dude. And I waited for some things, and I got some banana bread at work today, dude. Hell yeah.
Ah, say, don't be a dewdropper. Throw some concealer under those peepers, make like a swell, and go put on the Ritz.
All right. Here we go, everyone. Good morning and welcome to a Monday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Ziggle zag it. Let's get back at it.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
The guy is a nut bar. A nut bar.
Feeling good in the neighborhood here on a sunny Monday morning in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. I'm coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center. Looking out over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain. It's a picture perfect day. The pod dog is out in the yard.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
Sunning herself. I have to say, and this is an extremely weird reference at the top of the show, but when she's out there lying on the porch in the sun in the morning, I think about the line in Love in the Time of Cholera by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. These guys. Sorry, this is how we're starting the week, everybody. But this line, it's weird when, like, you know, you have a lot of assigned reading in college, and it's weird what sticks with you. There's a line about these men, many of whom in the region had hernias, and so their junk was very swollen from these hernias.
Beautiful purple balls.
And they would sit, and there's this line in Love in the Time of Cholera where this kid is traumatized because he's like walking down the street and all the guys in the book, the older men, are just out sunning their beautiful purple balls, like sunning their herniated testicles. Should we go back and start the show? By the way, it's episode 2959 in a collector series, and
let the fun begin.
We're off to a hot start. Hey, we are so excited that we are going to be doing TBTL in a few weeks at the Thing Festival in Port Townsend, Washington, and I just found out some exciting news, which is that we have a rider, meaning we get to select, you know, riders, a thing like bands or performers get to have, as far as like what are your demands of the things that need to be backstage. So I thought Andrew and I could figure out what's on our rider for the Thing Festival. I know one thing that's definitely going to be on there.
Of course, you can't go wrong with some sour cream and onion so long as you bring ridged chips.
So that's one thing, but we'll figure out the rest of the list coming up. Speaking of my friend Andrew, I was at a party at his house this weekend, and I pulled a move. I can't decide if it was the greatest or worst party move I've ever pulled.
I'm starting to feel like a corn dog at a hot dog party, and it ain't flattered, I'll tell you that.
So we'll talk about that too. Oh, and the Philly Fanatic, which is a mascot, in case you didn't know, the Philly Fanatic may go free agent, may declare itself. I don't believe the Fanatic has a gender. The Fanatic may declare itself a free agent and go on the open market to see if other teams want to pick it up because of a dispute between the Philadelphia Phillies and the puppeteers who helped create the Fanatic back in the 70s. So we'll get into that as well. First, though, we have to say hello to my good friend, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He did not miss the Sausage Fest this weekend at all. He was a grill master there in the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. A little more BG on him.
He started recording in the early 80s. He's known for his love songs and his political songs.
He is Andrew Walsh, and he is joining me right now. Hey, my dude.
Hey, how you doing? And I'd like to say a special welcome to all of the Lauren Ober fans who are joining us for day two of the show. There you are, turning off your podcast as you listen to Luke's story about men sunning themselves in a fictional story from 50 years ago.
Well, okay. Listen. Good point. That was it. That's my big comeback. That's probably a bad way.
You really you put the realism into magical realism with that.
We got some serious Ober heat coming into this show because we had our new friendo Lauren Ober from the Spectacular Failures podcast. We had her on Friday, and then she tweeted about it, and a lot of people were interacting with that tweet. We were already getting emails, people saying Lauren Ober might be one of the best Friday friendos we've ever had. Sam Sanders, I think, retweeted the tweet.
Oh, is that true? Oh, that's good.
Yeah. We're getting that Sam Sanders bump.
Oh, wow.
It's been a minute since we've gotten that bump.
Yeah, it has.
And by a minute, I mean it's never happened before,
yeah.
So it's been a lifetime, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Susan Stamberg's follow-up podcast to Sam Sanders. It's different, you know, different people, different eras, different genres. But anyway, so we probably do have like 10 new people listening because they got on this train because of Lauren Ober. So
that's
what the show is about. It's mostly about level 101 level college literature references,
but only the bluer ones, or in this case, maybe the purple ones.
Exactly.
That's yeah.
Beautiful purple balls.
The fact that I found that on the fly while talking about Marquez and remembering, because I had to read like three of his books, so I could have gone with like Autumn of the Patriarch. But I'm actually mildly proud that I actually stitched that together. I'm not saying it was the right way to start the show. In fact, I can say for certain it was the wrong way to start the show. But I was at least proud that I got the details right.
And it's not on the show sheet. I want to, you know, the listeners should know that.
No.
Like, hey, Andrew, how's it going? Is on the show sheet. Going into this very graphic description from that story is not on the show sheet.
I apologize. Isn't it weird though? And there's a bunch of stuff on the show sheet that is already in danger. Red alert. Actual topics are in danger of being ignored. But isn't it weird the stuff that sticks in your brain from assigned reading?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not the overarching message of the work of Gabriela Garcia Marquez was or is. That is lost on me. In fact, it may have never penetrated my stupid brain. But sunning one's junk, that's right there at the tip of my brain, apparently.
Well, I should not encourage you on this, but I remember watching a movie version of Romeo and Juliet. What's it called? Romeo and Juliet. It's apostrophe. It's kind of the hip new version.
Yep.
No, we watched a version of Romeo and Juliet that I believe was made in the 1980s in I even want to say that Hugh Hefner might have even been like a producer of it or something. It was all fine.
You saw this in school?
There was one scene that it wasn't like I don't know why I feel like Hefner had a connection to it, but like that's what I'm saying is we watched this movie about, you know, some might call it a classic. Yet all I remember is there was a brief glimpse of a breast in it, and I think just the briefest. But we saw it in school. And also part of me thinks that it might have had something to do with Hefner as well.
At St. Ignatius or Walsh High?
I want to say this would have been St. Ignatius. They trusted us. They trusted us to be better than what I clearly am. Yeah. Like, I still don't know what the show is about. It's something
about... A Man for Boobies,
I believe there are some witches and a cauldron and a spot that won't come out.
Okay,
Romeo and Juliet,
right? I'm looking up... The problem is, here's the thing. If you go to Hugh Hefner's IMDb account... It turns out his fingerprints are all over literally thousands of Playboy-related video and film projects. So it's not really – I just Googled like Hugh Hefner, Romeo and Juliet, and it didn't bring me the listeners will be able to figure out if they care to investigate it. I will tell you, though, that like – man, had I seen, like, had I seen even a side shot of a woman's breast in school, I would have, well, first of all, I was mostly at schools where that would have been even more frowned upon than at St. Ignatius, which is really saying something, because you also went to a Catholic school. It wasn't exactly like a liberal hotbed. It wasn't like an art school or something. But that was the as I've talked about on the show many times, that was really the driving force in almost every movie decision I made, every video rental decision I made between the ages of 12 and 17 was, is there a possibility of boobs in this movie?
Yeah, yeah. I remember that phase too. And of course, I don't want to go too far down that line, but of course, then you also remember the movies that let you down. Right.
Sure. Absolutely.
Like, you're 13 years old. You're like, really? Everything on the cover of this movie told me that this was a winner. How is this not a winner?
How did you? Yeah. And I wish I could think of an example, but I know exactly what you mean. It's like, because of course they knew, the producers of these. I mean, if you were like smart, you would produce, and you produced a kind of lackluster straight to video type film. You are going to do everything in your power to make that the cover of the VHS tape, the rental cover, look to me like something that should have been in the midnight movie section of Blockbuster.
Right.
You know,
right.
Even if it was, even if there wasn't anything like that in there, you needed to trick a young Luke Burbank and Peter Williams into thinking there was a chance.
Right, right. Oh, you're looking for the up all night movie section that is right over there in the back.
Yes.
Next to Gilbert Gottfried.
Okay, speaking of being up all night, and yeah, I did that segue. I did that transition.
It's not bad.
I was at a wonderful party this weekend, Andrew. That was really fun. I know that it was Genevieve's party, not yours. You were clear about that on the show on Friday. Mm-hmm. But it was really – it was a great time. The roof did not collapse. You were grilling up a storm. This quite incredible thing happened, which you and I talked about, which was because of where you were manning the grill or personing the grill. There was sort of this like
– I was fanaticking the grill.
The way you were grittying the grill. I'd watch that reality show.
Oh, it's my where, God. Gritty in the fan?
It's where Gritty, the Flyers mascot, teaches people how to operate a barbecue grill. The where you had the barbecue set up, there was this kind of narrow walkway between some sort of taller structures. And so all of the smoke from the grill was just being channeled down this long hall like walkway and then out onto the street. And I was no joke two blocks away and I started smelling it. And as I said to you at the party, I almost turned into a cartoon being brought along on the smell. It was quite a way to walk into the get together. It was very clear what was going on. This is going to be a place where delicious food is being grilled up by one Andrew Walsh. And then the roof did not, like I said, did not collapse. I was nervous the whole night about, for you, Andrew, about if there were going to be too many people on the roof at any one time. But that seemed to be under control. And it was just a really wonderful time.
Good, good. Yeah, I do not know. Yeah, good. I hope everybody had a good time.
I think there were people who did not have a good time?
I don't know, maybe. I get in a weird headspace when I'm responsible for a party. No, I mean, I didn't hear any bad news from anybody, but, you know, when I'm responsible for a party, even though I, you know, it was not my party, as we made it clear, my name was on it, and it was in a place where I live, and I was cooking the food and doing a lot of the work, so it did sort of feel like my party, and I get really anxious. I want to make sure that everybody's having a good time. I lose perspective on things. I feel like I'm being a bad friend because I see somebody come, I say hello to them, they disappear for an hour, then they leave, and I never talk to them. I'm like, that person hates me because I didn't spend any time with them at my party, and then I'm like, no, it's not all about you. Parties are where other people can talk to each other. But then I start to feel really guilty. I called at least two people the wrong name, one incredibly awkwardly when I was introducing her to a bunch of people. Like, I just have – I mean, I'm not trying to be the bummer that I am in life, but I got to say, like, often
– be the bummer you want to see.
Yeah. I think that's be the bummer you want to beat up. I mean, often after a party like that, I will have a lot of regret the next day, which also just probably also comes along with being hungover the next day. But this time I felt like I was watching it happen in real life. At one point, like, I guess I probably got a little bit too into my cups too early. It didn't seem that way until I was talking with one person. Like, I was talking with one person who was clearly way too drunk at one part of the night, right? And I'm like, this poor SOB. And we don't have to go into that, but it's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, you know, everybody's standing around, like, in this person. It's just that moment where this person is being very drunk, not saying anything necessarily wrong, but just, like, everybody's just kind of like, you know, just waiting for the rambling to end. And then one time not long after that, I'm inside talking to somebody, and I see that person start to glaze over as I'm talking and then just kind of, you know, like start looking past me and then veer into a different conversation. I'm like, oh, no, now I'm that person. And then that feels really bad. And then I don't know. I don't know.
It's like the poker thing. They say, like, if you can't figure out who the sucker is in the poker game after 5 minutes, it's you.
Exactly.
If you can't figure out who the drunk person is at the party.
Exactly.
It's possibly you. Well,
but you think that everybody had a good time. It felt like
everybody
okay
that I talked to seemed to be having a good time. You seemed to be totally on the exact right wavelength in terms of just being jovial, and you didn't seem overly drunk at all. I also think I left on maybe the earlier side of things, because here's what was going on for me. I was still getting updates on this TV story that I had running on Sunday, and they were sending me changes like into the night. And so I was trying to kind of monitor that. And I knew that I needed to go deal with that because of the time difference and stuff. Like, and so I was kind of, my mind was a little bit on that. And I also, because I'm not drinking, I noticed that, like, you know, I'm just moving at a different speed than everybody else. So I had a really fun time in the early part of the night, 'cause we were all kind of, We were all moving at the same pace, and then people started to time travel and accelerate into a dimension that I was not really able to access.
Uh-huh.
And my goal was to just like exit right at that moment, which coincided with me needing to go and re-record some stuff anyway. So I'm standing around, I'm talking to our friend Barry from Broadcast Coffee, our friend Hannah Brooks Olson from the Spotless podcast, and Barry's husband. And we're just having a lovely time, but I don't think any of us were really drinking very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I could feel the energy on the roof shifting a little bit, which was great. I saw you emerge at some point with a whiskey bottle and go over to the corner of the roof where you guys were. I don't know what you were trying to do, pick up radio telemetry from Mars or something.
No.
There was like some kind of involved experiment going on involving antennas.
No. I couldn't get my CD player to work because of the.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah, because Genevieve had the Spotify account bumping on the inside of the house. We had to play CDs, which was kind of fun to bring out.
Yeah, I liked
old
that
CDs.
Move when I went down to the grill. You had your own musical situation going.
Yeah, but then we realized at one point when we brought the boombox upstairs after the grilling, the batteries in it weren't strong enough to keep the CDs. It was like it was a very 1993 feeling as everybody's gathered around the CD player trying to figure out why it's skipping and whether or not it's track one on my Diggable Planet CD or if it's something wrong with the angle of the CD player. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, that explains that. But what I realized was I needed to leave, but I also felt bad that I was leaving on the earlier side and I didn't want to go make the rounds.
Yeah.
And because one of two things, either, and I was mostly thinking about Camaro Kev, who I hadn't gotten to talk to enough. And so I was, and he and I kept going, okay, we're going to talk later. And then later sort of didn't come. And I felt bad going over and being like, all right, I'm out. And also, nobody really cares that much. Like, I'm the kind of person who thinks, well, if I leave, I mean, is the party going to end? Like, can these people even have fun without me? And it turns out they absolutely can, and so...
Attention, everyone! I have an announcement to make! I am leaving this party!
So I looked to Barry and Hannah and Barry's husband, and I said, like, okay, guys, I'm going to pull a total Irish goodbye here and just leave and not tell anyone I'm leaving. And Barry was like, oh, we were going to do that, but okay. And I was like, give me 5 minutes, you son of a bitch. And then Hannah sagely said, okay, everyone, just fake uproarious laugh right now, and then Luke, run for it. And so they did, and
traitors.
I did, and nobody noticed that I heard from, except like an hour or two later, I got a text from Camaro Kev that was like, oh, did you leave? And I was like, yeah, I had to go do a thing, I'm sorry. He's like, oh yeah, no problem, man, we'll catch up later. So I have to tell you that, like, that was a very liberating experience for me, because again, part of it is my narcissism, assuming that anyone cares if I'm at a thing or not at a thing, which I'm sure I'm overestimating how much it matters. And also, I'm still a little bit not sensitive, but it's like I'm still not 100% comfortable on how I am around parties where everyone's drinking except me. Mostly I just don't want to seem lame, I guess. So it was great, though, because I left. Nobody cared. The night continued on, and I was safe. I actually ended up getting a hotel room because I had to re-record all this stuff. I didn't want to drive all the way home. So I was, like, safely ensconced in my hotel room. I got my stuff done. I hit the hay. It was wonderful. I may never say goodbye to anyone again when I leave any event is really my point in this, Andrew.
Yeah, I love ghosting. I mean, I prefer that. As a matter of fact, this is really rude.
It's a little harsh.
This is probably even ruder. I didn't see you go, but like at one point, like I said, I got really in my head at some point during the night. And maybe it was just like this one interaction with one person where I realized like, I'm like, oh no, like, am I just being a blabbermouth? Like, let's keep that to
you're
the day
so not
job.
That way though. When you drink I've said this to you before though, all of your good qualities are only amplified. You're more thoughtful and kind. Like you, I'm not trying to encourage. I just got an email from your liver just saying, bro, yeah. Bruh, why are you doing this right now? But like, I'm not trying to encourage your drinking or whatever, but like, I just got to tell you, you do not, like, you don't ramble on. If anything, you go inward in this way that's like, you're very conscious of not wanting to come off as drunk.
Yeah, I just got in my head. Like, that's the best. I mean, I think that's the best way we can put it is I got it in my head.
I'm just trying to confirm to you that I doubt you were being as annoying as you thought you were being, because I've never observed you being that way.
But there was like, and again, like, there were just a few fumbles early on that I felt terrible about that I couldn't get out of my head, including introducing somebody and pronouncing her name wrong and just kind of not – and she didn't know anybody else at this party, didn't know Genevieve, didn't know anybody, and I just kind of like – I couldn't get over that. I couldn't get over a couple of other things.
Was she crashing the party?
No. She is somebody from Nail Salon. She had smelled the burgers and came on over. No. But anyway, I just had a few what I consider to be faux pas that hopefully other people didn't remember, but I was very, very much in my head and feeling kind of anxious about a lot of things. And so at one point I'm sitting on the roof with some folks, and I kind of watched some people ghost, and I will admit to feeling somewhat relieved.
Oh, no.
At one point I saw somebody kind of said goodbye to some other folks, and then as they were coming outside, this sounds so terrible, but I was kind of like, I kind of hope they don't say goodbye to me, because I don't know how I'm coming off right now, and I don't need to do more damage. Like, I just
it's not a statement about them. It's a statement about you.
Exactly. And I was just feeling very – I just started to feel very insecure, and I don't know why.
Aww.
But again, what I need to remember is that, like, people's takeaway from the party isn't, like, how much FaceTime did I get with Andrew, and was he coherent? Like – and again, like – and actually, I mean, in all seriousness, like, I was not – I know that I wasn't super loaded at this party. I think it was just more social anxiety, which was leading to more social anxiety, which is leading to more mistakes, which is leading to more social anxiety. So, you know, whatever. I definitely had a good time at times, but I do know that at one point I saw some people leaving, and I think we were both like, I think they were both thinking, I hope we get out of here without having to say goodbye to anybody else. And I was thinking, I hope they get out of here without me having to say goodbye to them.
Then you're winning.
That was win. We definitely won 1-1. So, I do hope. What time do you think you left, by the way?
Like 11.
You know what I ended up doing that night? So people leave, and, you know, Genevieve got a mini keg. So, you know, this is like a party that by the time everybody was gone, and I want to say everybody, well, Camaro Kev crashed out on the couch. He had been, I think, enjoying some seafare related activities all day long.
I think they went to, I thought that like they maybe all went to the White River Amphitheater for like a concert.
Yeah, I don't think he was part of that. Pain Festival or whatever it was called. Another friend of ours went to that. I don't think he did. But anyway, point is he was a little tuned up anyway when he came over, which is always delightful anyway. He's actually a lot like me. He always apologizes the next day. He feels like he just ruined 100 friendships. And we're always like, no, you were absolutely charming and wonderful in the life of the party.
Yeah.
But anyway, I got to say, I think everybody probably took off probably around 2, maybe a little bit later. Genevieve went up to bed, and then that's when Andy time kicked in. Camaro Kev.
Oh, good, but you got some Andy time.
I stayed up until 5 in the morning continually drinking and cleaning the hell out of the house. You know, there were solo cups all just like taking out the trash. There was just tons of dishes and just tons of debris that had to be taken care of. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to put on my Comedy Bang Bang. I'm going to finish this bottle of whiskey. And we're going to get to town. Put on my headphones, because I will say this, and I think it's okay to say this, but Camaro Kev. Mm-hmm. You can hear him. You can hear him sleeping from a little ways away.
I don't want to put him on blast. I may have referenced this on the show before, but one time I was staying on the ground floor of their lovely home, and he was on the third floor of their lovely home, and I'm pretty sure I heard him snoring.
And I will say,
I was like recording it on my phone to play for him the next day to give him crap about it.
Actually, at the very end of our boat adventure show, we actually had a little secret track of him snoring. But I will say that I hope if he does hear this, he takes it in the spirit it's intended, because I bet you we could have a snore off. You know, you put us each in a chamber and record the
sleep apnea. I might be, because first of all, I think I snore a lot. Carrie wears earplugs now. I mean, that's just a given. Like, we're in a relationship where the earplugs are going in before anyone can go to sleep, at least before Carrie can go to sleep. And then I'll do that thing where I'll kind of wake up. I'll realize, I'm gasping for air, which I think is probably a sleep apnea thing. I was just going to say really quick, I know that move, and we're long overdue for our first break. I know that move where it's like you're feeling some anxiety and somehow kind of cleaning, getting everything back in order before you go to bed is some sort of weird penance slash it's a relief. I think I've mentioned this before on the show, but I remember having a party when I lived in LA, and this was when I was with my first wife. We had a party at our house in Echo Park, and I don't seem like a very socially anxious person, but when I'm hosting a party, I do feel pretty socially anxious, because I want everyone to have a good time, and it's just a lot coming at you, and you really want to be all things to all people. You just want to be able to interface with each person as they arrive, and you want to help them have a good time. And so I remember, just without meaning to, I think just getting really drunk. Like, I think I wasn't eating. I was running around trying to host, and I'm probably drinking a lot because I'm feeling nervous, and just having this moment of realizing I might be one of the drunkest people here, and this is my house. And there was like, I don't know, it felt like 150 people in this small house in LA. And that was a horrible feeling. And I remember, like, I sort of powered through it, but it was probably 4 in the morning, and I had like gotten in bed. I got in bed. I remember wearing minimal clothing, probably just my underwear, and then getting up. I was really hungry or something, waking up and going into the kitchen and looking around for food, realizing I had not eaten at all during the party, and finding on the grill a hot dog, like the now extinguished grill, like a cold hot dog, and then taking it and eating it, standing, like getting it, going back in the house, eating it in the middle of the living room, and then realizing people were coming over for the party. Like, somebody clearly – this was almost like a high school movie where, like, word had spread on this party, because that's how that ended up being 100 people. I didn't know half the people. Who knows who went through my DVD collection and underwear drawer that night, because it was, like, massive amounts of people I didn't know, and I was ham-boned. But I remember seeing people – like, hearing people trying to come into the house and then hiding in my own kitchen – cradling this hot dog, eating it, and hiding from potential partygoers who eventually got the message that there was no party, and then they turned around and left.
We definitely need to take a break. Can we do that when we come back? I know that we've talked a lot about this party, but can I just tell you about one small miracle that happened when we come back? Just one post-party miracle?
Yes, I would love to hear about that. And you're right, we got to take a break. So let's do that. Quick break, and then back with more TBTL right after this. said this is of Montreal.
Yeah. Boy, they really take a while to get to the lyrics.
Sure.
It's called The Party's Crashing Us, which is, seems kind of appropriate.
Yeah.
So you're,
yeah.
Before the break, you were talking about that last hot dog off the grill.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. You know, aside from the underwear thing and hiding from guests who might be able to see you through the front door window, which sounds terrible, actually,
yeah, it was horrible.
Those post-party hot dogs while you're cleaning up is like the best to me.
The sweetest.
Oh,
it's the sweetest.
I love it so much. Even if they've been, you know, been off the grill for a long, long time, and that's how they are when you're cleaning up after a party. Like you're saying, like you're flitting around, you're not doing a lot of self-care during the party, you're maybe drinking too much, not eating enough, and then you're cleaning up and you finally get your Andy time, maybe your Lukey time, whatever. But for me, then having the privacy to really show the hot dogs who's boss after the party is like my favorite moment. And I'm going to say this because I don't think these people will ever hear this, and it was totally appropriate what they did. But at the end of the party, we had kind of a plate of hamburgers and hot dogs and sausages. I don't remember how many, maybe just a handful. And in the back of my head, I was kind of counting those, right? I was like, okay, they're mm-hmm. my – and I don't even think I realized it until later that I was sort of thinking like, oh, those are my cleanup dogs right there. and then I when I realized I was thinking that was when our last final stragglers were leaving, and then they said, oh, look, some meat. And they just kind of stood around and ate a bunch of it. I think
oh, no.
all of – but they were totally in the right. Like, they were not being bad guests. Like, Genevieve
those
was
were
encouraging.
Your cleanup dogs.
Nobody knows. I can't be like, hey, hands off my cleanup dogs, right? Like,
no, you can't.
No, you can't. And they were totally in the right of doing that. I don't think they would hear this, but I would feel
– what's courageous about eating a hot dog?
I would feel terrible if they did. So anyway, so I'm sort of thinking like, well, there goes my little midnight snack thing. And then I'm cleaning up the party, and it was quite the mess. Like, there was just so much stuff all over the place. And, you know, I'm separating all the garbage from the recycling and throwing out old dips and, you know, just cleaning everything up and loading up the dishwasher. And then I peel back some tinfoil on a plate, and I go to throw the tinfoil away. And what was underneath there? Better than a cleanup dog, but a cleanup sausage. It was the last Italian sausage, which was by far. I don't know why we're even serving anything except for sausages at these things, except for the non-meat eaters. This jalapeno.
Jalapeno.
All right.
Jalapeno.
Oh my God, dude!
It Christmas was
a miracle.
It was a Crimbus miracle. Isn't that Tim and Eric? Anyway, it was just fantastic, and I peeled back that tinfoil, and it was like I was looking at Marcellus Wallace's soul. I swear, my face was bathed in golden light as I looked down at it, and that's how I ended my party.
Nice. Well, see, all's well that ends.
That's
well.
Right.
Okay, let's do this real quick. Lest we forget. Let us thank some donors of the day. These are generous folks who are donating to TBTL. They're making the show possible. We really do appreciate it. Troy Hughes of Cedarburg, Wisconsin.
Hughes it or lose
Laura.
It.
Laura. Wait, what? Oh, Hughes it or lose it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, what? I thought there was a Cedarburg reference I was missing.
Oh, no. I don't have any good Cedarburg references except for the obvious
I think
ones.
What, you know what was going through my mind when I said Cedarburg was – I was thinking Cedar Point.
Oh.
Because that's the famous famous amusement park that you used to go to, right?
That's in Sandusky, America's North Coast.
Yes. Laura Case Nagai of Puyallup, Washington. Andrew, it's happening. It's real. Aging is real because I'm probably 4 feet away from the donors of the day.
Uh-oh.
And I had to like scoot in to look at the last letter in Laura's last name to make sure I was getting it right. There would have been a time when I could have read that from across the room. Rachel Langen Lundmark of Tumwater, Washington. Corey Plucker of East Hampton, Massachusetts, pronounced East Hampton. Teresa Schlusher of Tumwater? Do we have an enclave in Tumwater? Do Rachel and
oh, wow.
Teresa know each other?
And that's where KUW famously has a repeater right? A repeater or a translator.
Do they say that in there
tower?
When they're, you know,
yeah,
when they're listing all of the the different places where you can pick up the frequency?
Yep, the public radio station, when they list all of their why am I blanking on the name? Their towers, I guess, right? Their repeater and translator towers. They always say, and Tumwater. Yes.
Tumwater is a weird word to me, but I love that Teresa and Rachel are there, and I love that they're supporting TBTL. And then Corin Copps of Seattle, Washington, another place that KUOW has an antenna.
Yes,
I think they might have one on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, South Capitol Hill, I believe.
I got to tell you, Andrew.
East Capitol Hill.
I got to tell you. I brought – Addie lives on Capitol Hill now, and I brought some of her stuff that's been up here in Bellingham down to her new apartment. And it was kind of an amazing little – this is not going to pay off. By the way, thank you, Corin, Teresa. Corey, Rachel, Laura, and Troy, thank you so much for supporting TBTL. We would not be able to do this without you. This is not going to probably really pay off, but Saturday, before I ended up over at your house where you were just a real mess, I brought some stuff down from our house that we've been storing for Addie. We put it in her new apartment, and it's pretty funny because her new apartment is on the same street as my old apartment when I was basically her age that she largely grew up in.
Wow.
And we got up on the roof, not strictly legal, of her new apartment, which I say new, it's like a 100-year-old building. But we climbed up from out her bedroom window, up the fire escape, onto the roof of the building, which had the most ridiculous view of Lake Washington and the Space Needle, you name it. I mean, a 360-degree view. And this was at the moment the Blue Angels were
flying. Oh, damn.
So this was, for me, this was just about as good as it can get. With my daughter, who probably doesn't care about the Blue Angels at all, honestly, on this roof. And I didn't plan this out. This just happened this was total happenstance. I just happened to be there. In fact, when I was pulling off the 520 bridge, they flew over and I was like, oh, that's happening today. Ah, well, that's cool. At least I got to see them for a quick second. But to be able to be up on that roof with my daughter and then watching them and then looking and like two buildings over is the roof. I used to get up on the roof of my building. I had a hibachi up there and a bunch of shit, which was totally not allowed. Anyway, it was just like a lovely little unexpected moment with my kid. And there was this kind of interesting sense of full circleness, I guess.
Yeah. Did it make you feel wistful, sort of, or just pure joy?
Good way, like a really positive way. It made me feel happy, and there was no melancholy in it. It was just like, this is so funny that we're up on this roof and we're looking over at this other building where so much formative stuff happened for me and for her. In fact, it was, and this is overly detailed, but we were walking past the building and the building, the Eltonian, where I used to live and where she lived as a little kid. And I was telling her some stories about it. And I was like, yeah, you know, like I only know, speaking of our friend Camaro Kev, the way that I know Camaro Kev is because I probably told this story too a bunch of times, but basically I left a note for the downstairs neighbors worried that Addie's running around was going to perturb them, and it didn't, but I became friends with them. And then through that, I started playing in this pickup basketball game where I met someone, and through them, I ended up meeting Camaro Kev. And so it was just interesting how, so you know, major forces in my life were impacted by living in this one little apartment on Capitol Hill, and to be standing in front of it with my daughter, now 25, and to think about her when she was 3 years old or whatever in that apartment, and she had a little pretend kitchen in our kitchen.
Yeah.
Because it was like this apartment was nothing fancy, but it was on the corner of the building. It had a kitchen, and then it had a little area at the end of the kitchen where you could put like a tiny table. And so we had a little kind of not even dining room table, but a little small kitchen table there. And then she had a fake kitchen set up so she could pretend to be cooking when I would be also pretending to be cooking. The difference was we were eating the food. I was pretending to cook. Anyway, so that was like a really lovely little unexpected moment that that was super fun. I feel like I was going somewhere with that, but I guess that was – the fact that I don't have any more words to say about that is an indication that that observation is done.
Well, here's my takeaway, which I think is everybody's takeaway. I would like to see a mini version of every room in my house. I think having a toy kitchen in the kitchen is awesome. I would like to see that in the living room and in the dining room and, yes, even in the bathroom. I love small-scale things.
That's what you would do if you were rich.
Actually, have you even noticed in our kitchen, and this has moved with us three different kitchens, I think, Genevieve and I – I want to say it might have even been at the Pasadena Rose Bowl flea market, but I feel like maybe it was earlier than that. We found a couple of like vintage dollhouse kitchen furniture things that are extremely detailed, and I cannot remember the brand right now. Collectors might know of it. We just paid a couple of bucks for these things, but like it's got a tiny little dishwasher, it's got a little sink set up, and we have two of them, and it was Genevieve's idea. They're very small but incredibly detailed with drawers that work. Even the dishwasher opens up and it's got a little basket that comes all the way out, and Genevieve sticks them to the wall in the kitchen with this adhesive Velcro thing, and we always have that in our kitchen, and I absolutely love it.
So you've already started this project.
Exactly,
actually, speaking of which, this brings us to top stories.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
I already know what's going to be in your rider, which is a miniature version of the green room.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
with
I got an email from
dolls
the Thing
of us.
The Thing Festival people were like, "What do you want in your rider?" And I was like, "Oh, now this is dangerous for me because I have this kind of I have this scarcity mentality. Like I didn't even think that we were gonna have a rider." And I'm sure that this is just a semi-standard email that they send out, like whether it's De La Soul or us, you know. And so I'm sure that like De La Soul is going to be able to command much more in their rider than we can. But just when I hear we have a rider, then I go from zero expectation to like, well, I don't know, caviar. I don't like caviar, but it's expensive.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Maybe we can have caviar. Mm-hmm. Like that's the way my screwed up brain works is, oh, there's a thing that we could have access to, or there is some sort of largesse that we may share in. Well, we must share in the most opulent of the largesse now.
And I'm bad at this. Like, I didn't even know
you're
about
the opposite.
This. Yeah.
You'd be like, just leave me, well, other than the tiny model of the green room, just, I don't know, a couple of old jalapeno sausages and I'll be fine.
Right. Jalapeno. I didn't know about this until I saw it in the rundown today. I'm like, oh, this is good. We can brainstorm like what we want in our rider. This is great content. I mean, I want a million things. And now my brain is just locking up. Like, I don't know. Can we just put in the rider, we don't want to be an imposition? That's what I want. That's what I want on this writer is not to be an imposition.
No. It's the opposite. I think we have to send a strong message that we are at least as high maintenance as Macaulay Culkin.
No, that's a really good point.
Who's also doing a podcast from this festival.
Right.
I think we need to act like, you know, as Tom Landry famously said, when you get to the end zone, act like you've been there. We need to act like we are a very hot touring act that plays all over the country all the time. And in fact, we are. Let me just mention some upcoming TBTL events. The Summer Picnic, September 7th at Woodland Park in Seattle, starting, around 3 p.m., I guess, is when we get possession of the shelter.
Yeah, 3 p.m. Is good. We can say 3 p.m. Okay. I'll try to get there early and set it up.
Well, I will, too, because we'll probably have to evict some people from – I was talking to Durs at your party because Durs and Nikki, as you mentioned, had reserved a shelter, and he was like, yeah, we had to then kind of like nicely try to evict various people that were just like hanging out using it, because of course the paperwork is only as strong as you are willing to make it in terms of your vociferous defense of your reservation.
Yes, I asked the woman at the office who gave me the permit and everything. I said, well, how do we reserve it? She's like, well, you know, you just have to ask people to leave. She said, you can make signs. We don't provide them, but you could just make some signs and tack them up around 2:30 saying this is reserved from 3 p.m. to 10. And then, you know, if there's any issue, make sure you have your actual your reservation or your permit on you, and you can show people the permit. And I'm like, oh, good. This sounds like something I'm very comfortable doing. This is great. This is what I was built for. That's what we should put in the rider. We need somebody to come to the – Wait, yes. No, the picnic comes first before.
No brown.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
No brown M&Ms. And could you send somebody to Woodland Park on September 7th, a Seattle Theater Group employee, to help us evict anybody hanging out at our reserved picnic shelter. Anyway, September 7th, that's the TBTL Summer Picnic. Come one, come all. Also, tourable, thanks for asking, TBTL 3K.
Are we going with that?
Name TBD. I don't know. It's my personal favorite. I'm not trying to just like – I'm not trying to unilaterally make that decision. I'm just calling it that because I really like it, but I'm open to something else. But the TBTL 3000 tour, Monday, September 30th in Orlando, Wednesday, the 2nd of October in New York City, and Friday, the 4th of October in Seattle, Washington. So those are all times we're going to be out in the world, and I think what we need to do is make sure that the people who are in charge of our rider know that we're kind of a big deal down at the Cracker Factory. So I'm going to put some Topo Chico on the list.
That's good, yep.
And maybe I don't. That's probably it. I'll take the brown M&Ms that Van Halen's not using. The whole conversation around riders kind of became a pop culture thing because famously Van Halen said they didn't want brown M&Ms in the backstage area. And the story on that is that it wasn't about the M&Ms. Their theory was that if you were looking closely at the rider to the point where you noticed that, then you were going to be looking at all the things associated with the act, including important things like lighting and safety. And so that's the story. Who even knows? And it's like maybe they put that much thought into it. Maybe they were just screwing around and the story has kind of taken on a life of its own. I tend to think that's more the case. There are some kind of interesting ones. You'd be unsurprised to hear that Kanye has made some demands in his rider. According to the Telegraph in the UK, his rider includes imported Versace towels on hand at all times, and that the people driving him around wear clothes that are 100% cotton. And then also, he demanded that his dressing room carpet be ironed by an assistant because it was too bumpy. Which, you know, it's the problem with these lists is it's hard to know how much of this is real or just kind of like a rumor that got out of control. Apparently, the Rolling Stones – this is kind of a funny one. The Rolling Stones had all of the, like, this kind of regular – you know, alcohol and cigarette requests, and they wanted a butler on hand 24 hours a day. But then they also – apparently, their rider requires a set of written instructions on how to use the electronics in their hotel room.
That I believe.
That's kind of
– that's a very practical – that's a band that has toured a lot and has aged a lot.
Yes. I could use that.
Yeah. Just
anytime I enter a hotel room, that's not true. Most of that's pretty standardized at this point. But yeah, like particularly if you are the Rolling Stones, I bet you in a lot of those green rooms, there's some television set up. There's some stereophonic thing that you probably have no idea how to run. Katy Perry is, according to this article, very into flowers. She has in her rider white and purple hydrangeas, pink and white roses, and peonies. Absolutely no carnations.
Oh.
Because she's not into carnations. And then this is the part which I've never met Katy Perry. I probably never will meet Katy Perry. But according to this, Perry also reportedly forbids her drivers from making eye contact or conversation with her. I would be surprised if that were the case. On the other hand, I could understand if she needed that in her life, which sounds weird, but it's like there is a level of celebrity that she's at where I mean, no eye contact is extreme. And again, I would be really surprised if that were actually it. But the idea of you're Katy Perry and you're playing a show and you also are then going to have to make small talk with every single person throughout the day. You have one of two choices. It almost goes back to this thing we were talking about hosting a party where either you're Katy Perry and you're going to like every single person you talk to at every level of this experience of doing the show, either you're going to have to like try to give them the experience they want, which is going to be very draining for you before you go on stage and then perform for 50,000 people or something. Or you're going to basically ignore them and look at your phone and everyone's going to have a story of how you were just kind of a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's kind of no in between. And depending on the kind of person you are, like I could see myself if I ever got to that level of fame, literally having it be a thing where it's like, nobody talk to him, please. Because I wouldn't be able to have a conversation with, let's just say, one of the gaffers or one of the, like, you know, the guy who pulls the chain up to counterbalance the lighting on the stage. He comes up and starts telling me that his, like, granddaughter is a big fan or whatever. Which would be weird. I'm now Katy Perry and me in this story because I don't know why his granddaughter would be a big fan of 43-year-old Luke Burbank. But I wouldn't be able to have that conversation without putting all of my mental energy into trying to give this random stagehand the experience he wants. And if you do that 100 times before the show starts, you're out of energy. So I don't know. I mean, it seems like a jerk. It's kind of like when Steve Harvey sent around that thing. It's like saying nobody – what was it? Like nobody come in my dressing room.
Yeah.
Nobody tried to talk to me before the show. And it seemed so jerkish, but I kind of got it.
Yeah, well, he had – well, as is the case with a lot of these things, he had a real tone issue with his. Mm-hmm. And I think it came – I could be remembering. I had totally forgotten that story. I could be misremembering. But I think that came from him, and he had a real tone issue with it, and it had his signature on it. I have a theory, which could be totally wrong, but like – the Katy Perry writer thing, even for the Carnations, like now I'm kind of like, hey, why we got to hurt Carnations' feelings? Like that could be something where Katy at one point says to one of her people, like, yeah, I'm not really into Carnations. And then like one person wants to really prove to Katy Perry that they have her back and like no Carnations, you know. And I could see the same thing with like the driver thing. Like maybe she's saying like, oh, God, I had so much mental energy taken up by this driver who just kind of kept peppering me with questions. I guess I kind of can't do that before shows. And so somebody writes it up like, no eye contact, leave her alone. She's in, you know, and then it kind of
totally
gets written up in the media.
Yeah, like one errant comment. And even the non-famous of us of the world all know that feeling of getting into like an Uber or Lyft. And just getting – you're just fried for whatever reason, and the driver is just feeling particularly chatty. And it's just – you don't even have to be famous to know what a not great experience that is. Now imagine you're going out to do a really hard job that involves a massive amount of concentration, and you get that person driving your shuttle van to the venue. That could be – that could put a crimp in your day.
Like the cab driver from those MTV shorts that used to play in between in between videos,
and I always
in the 90s.
Confuse that. I always think it's Dennis Leary, but I think it's Donald Loge.
I don't know the guy's name. I have a little tape of it. You've probably heard me use this in intros before, right? Now I can't find it though. I think this is like 3 seconds of it here. Although I could do better. Jimmy the cab driver.
You kind of remind me of that gal hitchhiking on the Smashing Pumpkins video.
He's like a cab driver, and he just like keeps on chatting. People
yeah, that's
and...
Donald Loge or Loge, which that was a great character.
Yes.
So I don't know. Back to our rider.
You know what I want? I thought of something.
We should legit put a couple things on there if we're going to get – like if they're going to give us free shit because I'll just – whatever. I don't care. I'll rip back the fourth wall. We're not even getting paid to do this. They're literally just letting us let some of our friends and family in. That's
right.
How we're getting paid. I think I'm getting paid $500 to do Napoleon Dynamite Live at – wait for it, Andrew – 10:30 on Sunday night.
Yeah, I was going to say I hope you're getting paid for that because that is something that that's a job and you're not – yeah.
And I'm a little – we'll talk about that more as that gets closer. But like they just said, hey, do you want to moderate the Napoleon Dynamite thing? And I was like, of course, because I'm a fan of the movie and I'm excited to talk to these people. And then they explained to me that it's on the main stage of the thing. It's at the like – the blimp hangar. It's in front of – I don't know how many people are going to stick around until 10:30 on a Sunday night. There's a reason they put it there. It's probably to try to keep everybody around. In other words, it's being thought of as the big draw.
Mm-hmm.
Although – so who knows? I mean there could be 3,000 people there. There could be 30. I don't know how effective it will be as a device for keeping people around. But I'm actually – I wouldn't quite say nervous, but I'm wondering what that's exactly going to be like.
Yeah. Do you ever get nervous? Honestly. Because I would be I would be straight up nervous about that. But like, is there any kind of onstage presentation thing that would make you just like say, yes, I'm nervous about this?
I was nervous about this thing that I did a couple weeks ago in Portland where it was a corporate event where it was me and it was a 12-year-old young man named Cameron who was playing childhood me. So they did a casting call and they found – somebody who looked like a – well, really, he doesn't look like me at his age. He looks like me now
right.
if you shrunk me down, which is a different thing, interestingly enough. So he looks like – we're wearing similar outfits. And that was sort of like a conceit that I was like, this is the conceit for the whole event. he and I are going to be going out on stage together doing little bits, and I was nervous about the crowd's reaction. Their reaction was ultimately fine. I think it was – they were. It wasn't like – we didn't bring the house down, but it wasn't a total bomb. It was just like a good – it was a good response. There were some unknowns there, and so I think I was I was 10% nervous there. But I don't I can honestly say I'm not – I don't get nervous about stuff like the Napoleon Dynamite thing anymore, which is weird because I have – broken through some mental barrier about what I feel like is my ability to be on stage in front of people. Like, I just feel now like it'll be fine. I have the ability to be out there and to just kind of like do okay.
Do you think that part of it is what I'm trying to do here, in case the listener is not following along, is I'm trying to break you mentally so that you can't do these gigs anymore. But do you think part of it is that you kind of can't let yourself feel nervous? Like, would you have admitted to feeling straight up nervous before that gig with the kid? Or would you have said like, no, I'm not nervous. Like, I'm, you know, whatever. I got to make sure my ducks are in a row.
I wouldn't have said it in front of the kid because I wouldn't want to make him nervous.
Right.
Because it was the first time he'd ever been on stage. He's like a kid actor. So he's probably done commercials and videos and things, but that's way different than you're going out in front of 500 or 1,000 people and doing like lines. So
wonder you weren't nervous.
If you pulled me aside, you and I, and said, how do you feel about this? I was like, well, we'll see how it goes. I'm a little bit nervous. But what was funny is once I got out there and I was, this makes it sound like I think I'm, the world's greatest MC or something, which I'm not. Everybody knows that that's
Nav.
Okay. I was going to try to go in a – who was I going to try to say? I don't know. Some old-time rapper. But when I got out there, what I realized was what I was nervous about was the kid's performance. Not that he was going to do a bad job, but just that he was going to freeze up. And he didn't. He did a great job. But then once I got out there and then I started just like kind of doing the thing I do, which is like improvising based on what's going on. And then we started having people up on stage and I was able to kind of like – riff off of what the people who we brought on stage were saying, then I felt very comfortable in my element. And so I would have told you beforehand, if it was just you and me, yeah, I'm a little nervous about how this is going to go. But with the Napoleon Dynamite thing, it's weird. This is I know this sounds like this is a very elaborate way of me kind of patting myself on the back, but it's weird for me to think that I'm actually not nervous about it. I'm just curious about what they actually want from me, how involved I really will be, and what is going to go on. But as far as walking out on that stage in front of however many people there are and talking into the microphone, the thought of that moment doesn't make me nervous anymore. And like 2 years ago, I would have been crippled by nervousness.
Are you going to wear a Vote for Pedro shirt and just like do a bunch of imitations of the famous lines from the movie and be like, that was so funny. You want to hear my imitation? Like, just kind of like,
I thought I would start it up by doing the dance that
good. That's a good place.
My version of the dance, really. I mean, that's the other thing too that I have to. Maybe that's why I don't feel nervous, is because nobody's there to see me. The draw is the cast members, and so my job there is really to just be a lubricant that keeps everything moving and highlights the people on stage who made the movie Napoleon Dynamite. It has really nothing to do with me, and so that also kind of takes a little bit of the pressure off. Like, we're doing Livewire at the Neptune Theater in September. I'll just take this moment to do a little quick free plug, in that I'm paying hundreds of dollars for this advertising time. September 6th, Josh Gondelman will be there, really funny comedian, and many others. So September 6th, the Neptune Theater in Seattle. Please buy your tickets. Please come see us. But that has me way more nervous than the Napoleon thing, because – there's more pressure on me and people are there to some degree to see me. So,
yeah. And actually, can I just say, while we're talking about thing here for a little bit, first of all, back to the writer talk really quickly. I like those little hot dogs that are wrapped in dough. I think we call them pigs in the blanket. Although
yes.
I know that.
Okay.
Okay. I like those.
Okay. Let's do that.
I do like those things.
I love it. Let's see how much of this will actually be funny. Let's we don't have to get it totally figured out today. In fact, we could do this offline. But let's literally make our list. So pigs in a blanket will be on there. I'm putting Topo Chico. And then let's see how much of the list we make actually makes it backstage. And then we can open the show by doing a compare and contrast.
I'll say one thing. They're giving me a ride. You know, I had to fill out all this kind of technical stuff. I'm working with the tech person to get that stuff all set. And the tech person, who's awesome, by the way, I think about her job. She is – dealing with a million, like, really, like, more high-pressure performers at this thing and like, more intense setup and everything. I think she's the point person for all of this. Yet she, like, hopped on the phone with me, and, it like, I said, hey, do you have time to talk to me about some technical stuff? She's like, yep. She's just, like, friendly and just, like, I can't believe she had time to even, like, you know, talk to me about SM58s versus another kind of microphone. But anyway, she really wanted to know where we're both staying. And I said, I think Luke's staying in a private residence somewhere. I'm staying at this hotel. And she really wanted to know, where is Luke staying? And I was just like, can I ask why this is so important? She's like, yeah, in case you guys need a ride to the venue. And I was like, what? You're giving me a ride to the venue? Like, that to me is red carpet service. I was very excited about that.
I might take advantage. I'm staying out on Marrowstone Island, which is kind of a hike, actually.
Oh, then you need to get me that information, and I'll see if we can get you a ride.
Durr. But this, whoever's dispatched for that, cancel. Carol, hold their calls, because it's like a good. I'm almost in Seattle, which is I'm staying in this place because of these extremely awesome people that Carrie and I know, who live out on Marrowstone and have a guest house, and they're letting us stay in the guest house because they're sweethearts. And so I want to take advantage of that. And also, I think everything was already kind of sold out by that time. Like, the town of Port Townsend is pretty much booked up for this weekend. But what I didn't realize was it is far away. So anyway,
yeah.
So I've got pigs in a blanket, Topo Chico water. Anything else?
Just like little dolls of ourselves, not like the kind from APM, but like very, very small ones that
handmade.
I can put into my little kitchen.
Luke and Andrew dolls.
Yeah, and then and a setup of the stage so we can kind of prep by, like I can play with my dolls and kind of do my dinner with Andre kind of thing.
You can always get a reservation. Yeah. Whole Foods voodoo vegan sandwich I'm going to put in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the worst part about this experiment is this is all going to fall on some production assistant,
mm-hmm.
some person who's got a million things to do in the thick of this festival.
I
know.
It's
going to be like, are you shitting me? Whole Foods voodoo vegan sandwich?
Right. And maybe it'll be like your last meal, though, in a prison. You're like, I want a Chipotle-style burrito. Ooh. And it's just like, well, whatever's in the kitchen. That's how they talk in prison.
That is exactly
kitchens.
What will happen. First of all, I'm sure that the Whole Foods thing will be rejected immediately because there's not a Whole Foods in Port Townsend.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll just put vegetarian sandwich.
I am, though, going back to the conversation about nervousness, and I'm not trying to make you nervous about my performance, but I will say I have gotten...
Hey, listen, I recently managed a 12-year-old version of myself, so I think I got you under control.
I will be a 12-year-old version of myself. Are you ready to handle that
Oh,
shit?
No.
Oh,
no,
no.
Very, very bad.
But I will say that I am more... If we're avoiding the word nervous, I am more keyed up, or I have more question marks in my head about the Thing Festival performance, almost more than anything I've done recently.
Whoa.
Even because, like, the TBTL shows that you and I do, those are to people who know TBTL and maybe some friends and family that they drag along. And we try to be performative and we try to be open and bring everybody in. But you and I are performing to our core base, to our P1s, to people who get the jokes. And that's become a comfort zone for me. When Vives and I did the small After These Messages podcast thing at the Comic-Con a couple of months ago, I was very nervous about that, but I was able to also say the people in the seats, almost like the opposite. I'm like, people will be milling about. They'll come. Like, I didn't have a huge expectation to captivate the crowd on that one because they don't know who we are, and it's in between things, and people are just trying to rest after, getting their faces painted. Right. I don't think there's face
waiting
painting
in line for Nathan Fillion's autograph.
That is a better reference. Thank you. And so my expectations were different.
Renaissance Fair, not Comic-Con.
I'm just blabbing. But
people are tired from the jousting.
Right, exactly, from eating giant turkey legs. This, though, the Thing Festival is different wherein it's not going to be mostly our core listeners who get our jokes. We have to be entertaining to people who don't know our thing. But I do care. It's not like the Comic-Con where it's like, these people aren't going to get it anyway. They're not going to really care. They just want to sit. We can do our thing. I'll try not to get my ego bruised if nobody pays attention to us. At Thing, like, this is going to be a big crowd. And there's a bunch of other podcasts there that are like Macaulay Culkin. People know who that is, right? Like, I feel like in Lindy West, not doing a podcast, but doing a presentation, like, she is a known commodity. I'm very I'm excited at the prospect of doing this. I'm not complaining, but I do feel more nervous about like how, I mean, even before we could get on stage, what you and I are going to plan on doing up there, because we can't do a test us on our TBTL knowledge. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I mean, this is honestly, of all of the conversations we have that should be off air,
we should have this on the list. Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah, for so many reasons. Most of it just being, I don't know how interested listeners are in this aspect of our life, but I go back and forth on that because I actually don't know how many people are going to wander into that theater who are not TBTL fans. Hmm. Like, I don't know. I've never tried to do this. The closest thing I could say to this that I've done is I did perform at the Sasquatch Festival years ago in the comedy tent.
Yeah, as a stand-up, right? Or as a comedian?
As a stand-up, yeah. with no profile. There was a lot of people in there, but it's because it was a tent and they were hot and mm-hmm. they were waiting for Hannibal Buress.
Right.
It was pretty – honestly, it was pretty brutal. I don't think – I would never sign up to do that again. But – I guess my thought is I don't know how many people are going to – I have to say we're in this kind of refractory period of the day. The schedule is now out, and we're happening at a time when we're not going up against very much else that's happening, which probably is intentional. They're probably trying to kind of spread things out so you don't have like a million things going on at once so people have to make a bunch of hard decisions. So I don't know. I could see the theater being totally full just because people are like, I don't know. We got to be somewhere right now. Or I could see everyone being off having dinner or mm-hmm. a late lunch and then – and we're playing to the like 12 TBTL fans that happen to also be going to Thing. Mm. I don't know which one it's going to be. But if it's the latter, if it is just TBTL fans, I don't know. I don't think we want to lean too far out of TBTL just because that's what we do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's sort of like, I guess it would be like a band that's playing the festival thinking like, well, let's play someone else's music because these people don't know our music. It's like, I don't know. Like, you still got to play your songs that you wrote, right?
Right, right, right. Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'm just – yeah, I don't know if that analogy is perfect because music is music.
Because you haven't written any songs for this show?
I'm working
bro,
on it.
Bro, I have like –
I got one instrument.
Like 15 unreleased tracks right now that I'm ready to do.
I guess the difference is like – If you're kind of a new band that doesn't have a huge profile, you're still making music, and you might play the songs that are like, well, I hope people will tap their foot to this or stare at their shoes or whatever kind of music it is. You don't have to know, as opposed to going out and maybe doing a full, album from beginning to end that is like has some sort of complicated backstory that you have to know the first two albums to even understand the growling sounds that we're making throughout this record. You know, like the idea of leaning towards a more accessible presentation as opposed to, you know, just thinking that everybody in the crowd kind of knows the background of a joke that you might throw out there.
Oh, I assume no one in the crowd will know the background of right. any of the things we're saying. But I don't know. To me, I think there's – and we'll probably figure this out. There's sort of a middle way. I think we'll probably do kind of our sort of standard open. We'll end up reflecting on like just the fact that we're there. I'm sure that I will mention early and often that I got married in front mm-hmm. of that theater. Maybe Carrie and I renew our vows. Maybe we do it to the Kenny Rogers song Lady. I'm just
– Maybe you and I get married.
Ooh. Thanks a lot, Obama. Or – and then I think maybe if there's somebody that's going to be performing at the festival who wants to come on, maybe we bring on a guest in the middle somewhere. We chat with them a little bit. And then maybe we do some kind of audience interaction. And then, blink and it's over is kind of what mm-hmm. I think is going to happen. Not that I want to underplan it, but I don't know. I'm feeling oddly not that nervous about this. That could change too. I don't know. I really think there's been something about I used to feel so much anxiety around Livewire, and we have managed to they've managed to put together such a great staff on the show, and there's good systems in place, and I just over and over again I go out and I do the show, and it, I mean some of them are better than others, but it just happens and the people are fine, and then they go home and they go to sleep and they get up the next day, and it's like everyone's life just goes on. Something I feel this this could change for me, I guess, again, but something weird has shifted inside me where I'm just not as freaked out. Even these shows we're going to do for the mini tour. I mean, we're going to friggin' Orlando. What mm-hmm. is Orlando even a city? Is that even a place? Like, we're going to go do the show. TBD, by the way, we're still trying to figure out the venue. But, I mean, there's a lot of unknowns in that.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I have this weird sense like, I don't know, it'll be fine. So that's at least that's how I'm feeling this morning on Monday.
Okay, well, don't let me. I'm sorry. I mean, we're having a nice conversation about everything
no,
that we can demand.
For both of us.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, we
so
gotta
far,
go
I have
in there and
pigs
act
in
like
a blanket,
kings.
Pigs in a blanket, Topo Chico water, handmade Luke and Andrew dolls, mm-hmm. vegetarian sandwich. Do you want some alcohol? Do you want like a bottle? That's kind
of
rock and
oh,
roll.
Oh yeah, let's get.
Do you
let's
want like
get
a bottle?
Of,
do you want a beer?
Let's get a six pack of Miller Lite.
Pack of Miller Lite. Do you want to
Tall Boys?
Do wanna,
obviously,
push,
do we even have to say
oh,
that?
Oh, Tall Boys. Okay, obviously, I put that parenthetically. Mm-hmm. Tall Boys. Obvs. do you think they'll know? Do you think they'll know what I mean when I say obvs?
I think they will.
Do you want some hard? Do you want some hard drink? Do you want your a bottle of? Because I think maybe we get to like. Do we get to take this stuff if we don't use it?
I don't know, but if we whisper, we'll get away with it. You can
I mean,
throw.
You
can throw
a bottle.
I mean,
what's
throw
the,
a bottle
what's
of Jim
the whiskey
Beam
that you prefer.
Jim Beam. I mean, throw it on there. See if they will. But you know, I don't know. I'm just
one
so bad at
Jim
asking
Beam.
For things. I don't want to feel like they're.
Well, that's what I'm here for, Andrew. This is the beautiful. this is the nature of our friendship and our partnership and our collaboration, and this is why we're renewing our vows at the Thing Festival. Is because you don't like to ask for stuff, and I ask for too much stuff. And in the middle is the right amount of stuff.
Are you getting nervous, though, about my state as I get out there? You're going to roll me out there. I'm going to have a giant belly, like a distended belly full of pigs in the blanket. I'm going to be carrying a bottle of Jim Beam. And
I love
and
it.
My last Miller Lite hanging off of the plastic ring as I stumble out onto the stage.
That would be so great. I am totally in support of that, except for the fact that I think – wait, you're not running the board for this, right? They're doing that in the back of the room?
I will be running some sound, but not our mics.
Okay. So. Well, just – I want you to be at a level of awareness that allows you to activate our microphones or whatever your
okay.
technical duties are.
All right.
But then
good.
After that, I'll just – again, the me and Carrie renewing our vows is going to take a good 45 of our
mm-hmm.
50 minutes. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about this Philly Fanatic story real quick?
Yeah, let's do it. I think
it's tomorrow. Let's do it.
Yeah, because I have a key question about it that I want to ask you.
Okay. So the Philadelphia Fanatic, beloved mascot, was created back in the 70s by the Philadelphia Phillies organization and by this, puppeteering company. Of course, I don't have the, let's see here. I'm going to go
like
to the link
H and
now.
E, I want to say.
Yeah, and I did a little research on H&E, and it's basically a husband and wife. Harrison and Erickson are their last names, and the wife worked for a while, I think, with Jim Henson Productions. She was sort of a puppet design person, and then formed this company with her husband. And you go to her Wikipedia page, and it says that her company's known for making the Philadelphia Fanatic and then some other mascot that I hadn't heard of. You get the sense that the Philly Fanatic was the real, they really struck gold with that.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1970s, the Phillies went to this company and said, let's collaborate and create this mascot. And so they came up with this idea that together, the groups, well, the Phillies would contend that the baseball team presented a bunch of the details of this mascot, the color it would be, its kind of physical shape, and what it would be all about. And then the company, H&E, makes the mascot, fabricates it in a couple of weeks, sends it over, and then the Philly Fanatic becomes a big hit. This touches off a series of legal actions from the H&E, I'm going to just call them the puppeteering company for lack of a better way to describe them, where they keep trying to basically sue and renegotiate the contract because they got paid, according to the Phillies, a couple $100,000 for this initially, and then the Fanatic is obviously worth a lot of money as an idea now because it's been trademarked and it's been used in various things and it's associated with the team. So the Phillies recently got a letter all these years later from this company, Harrison Erickson, saying, we own the Philadelphia Fanatic still, And if you don't renegotiate this contract that we signed, I believe the latest one was in the 80s.
84,
if you don't renegotiate this,
so,
if you don't renegotiate this contract with us, I feel like someone has gambling debt at H&E.
Yeah.
Like, this is a weird – this is like 20, 30 years later. We're like, hey, you better renegotiate this. They basically are – they're threatening the Phillies organization that they are going to – legally bar them from using the Philadelphia Fanatic. They're going to get an injunction, and then they're going to put the Philadelphia Fanatic on the free agent market so that other teams could hire the Philly Fanatic to be their mascot. At first I thought, yeah, right, no one's going to do that, but then I thought, that's the ultimate trolling. If you are a Phillies rival, mm-hmm. like, can you imagine if, I don't even know, does Oakland have a mascot? Does Oakland still play in a baseball stadium, or do they just line up?
It's a giant bathroom.
Like, do they just find some grass somewhere, and then they just hit the ball around? But like, I think of Oakland because there was kind of a rivalry between the A's and the Mariners for a while a couple seasons ago, where they were, their social media people were trolling us, and our social media were giving it back to them.
Stomper. But it's an elephant.
The mascot?
Yeah, the elephant. It looks like it's an elephant of some sort.
But it'd be like, I mean, talk about a way to troll the Phillies. If you went out and you actually signed the Philadelphia Fanatic to be the Washington Nationals mascot, I mean, that would be hilarious. So the reason this is in the news is because the Phillies baseball team has responded to this letter by countersuing. They're basically like, you think you're going to bully us behind the scenes? H&E, you're gonna try to say that you own the Fanatic. Here's all the reasons that you don't own the Philly Fanatic. And I actually read the whole lawsuit this morning, Andrew. It's actually pretty good reading. It's all written from the perspective of the baseball team, so you got to take it with that caveat. But it's basically this whole detailed report about how, like, who actually thought of the wide hips on the Fanatic,
yeah.
and all of the, like, what we would consider the dazzling deets of the Philly Fanatic, that the team maintains that it was all their idea, and they cite the guy who supposedly thought it up. And then they cite the Phillies intern who first wore the Fanatic outfit and made it a hit because of the way that he was giving, you know, crap to the umpires and messing with the crowd and doing all that stuff. And they just go on to detail basically how, like, everything good about the Philadelphia Fanatic has been because of the creativity of the Philadelphia Phillies organization, and that contractually this puppeteering company has no right to claim that because they signed away all their rights in 1984, basically. They got a bunch more money, and it was like, and now we don't have any claim on this. And to read it now, of course, anytime you read one of these legal things, it's a compelling argument usually from the people putting the claim in. So in reading it, I was like, yeah, these guys, these puppeteers have no case. But I also haven't actually read the agreement from 1984, so I don't know what the puppeteers are entitled to. It seems a little desperate, though.
Yeah, my thing about this was I too was like, okay, so if the Fanatic, which is one of the most recognizable and kind of iconic mascots in baseball, I'm like, if it goes on the free market, does another team just grab it up? Almost every team, even if we haven't heard of it, probably has its own mascot. And then it occurred to me that what you do is, like, their rivals are the Mets, right? If the Philly Fanatic isn't the most iconic mascot, then Mr. Met is. And what the Mets do is they bring him on, and then Mr. Met,
I would, like, say the San Diego Chicken of baseball.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Put him up there.
But that started in basketball, right, originally? Anyway, my point is you get Mr. Met out there, like, kind of faux beating up the Philly Fanatic, right? Like, you keep Philly Fanatic, like, associated with Philadelphia. Then when Philadelphia comes to town, oh, here comes the Fanatic running out, and Mr. Met beats him up.
You bring him out as the heel.
Right. Exactly. That's just another way to go.
You can have a whole thing.
Yeah.
God, peace and love, but is the Mariner Moose not just the worst effing mascot?
I think you've brought this up before, and I was more lukewarm on it, but I was talking about it at the Rainiers game, because now, like, the disease has spread. So down at the minor league level, they have the Mini Moose or something like that. Like, there are so many better things. Like, they're called the Mariners. They should have something marine related. I think it was my friend Brendan who said it should be like a crab. Maybe, or some sort of a, you know, like the old man of the sea carrying the trident, but or, you know,
it needs to not be buff. Here's why. Listen, it's so simple. Everybody, listen to me.
You hit the ball. Sorry.
You throw the ball. Mascots, when they're buff, are not interesting. Whether it's the Denver Nuggets, like overly buff cougar that dunks, or even, God bless, Sasquatch, like the Sonics, RIP, the Sonics mascot. Like, mascots that are fun are dinguses.
Mm-hmm.
They have weird. It's why the new mascot for the Kansas City Chiefs, which is a kind of a weird. Am I thinking of the right team? I think they have a kind of a weird, like a Philly Fanatic looking thing now.
Gritty.
It's also yeah, right. Philly. It's why Gritty. It's why Gritty is a hit. It's why the Fanatic is a hit, because the mascot needs to just be some weird derping dingus mm-hmm. that just kind of runs around. It needs to not be like an extremely buff ram. Or like we don't
right.
It's like I feel like I could almost make the case that it's like that represents a sort of emergent threat in this country that I don't agree with. It's all of this military flyover, sing songs at halftime at the seventh inning, God bless America. We need our mascots to be buff so that, you know, like everybody knows that our team is the strongest and coolest. It's this like it's like, no, you need the mascot to be dancing to Old Town Road in an ill-fitting Western outfit, which is something the Fanatic recently did. I'm looking at the picture. Like, the mascots need to be – the more ridiculous, the more better. And it's like – that's even why Mr. Met works, because Mr. Met's face yes. is not anatomically correct.
It's great. Exactly. Now, there's one type of mascot that you run into problems with if you don't make him buff. And I would just maybe avoid this mascot altogether, but the bulldog. I feel like anybody who's the such and such bulldogs, the bulldog yes. always has to be kind of top heavy with big biceps, right? Because, I mean, it's a bulldog.
But just don't lean into the bulldog thing. Here's what you do. If you're Georgia, which, of course, they have the bulldogs, bring out the pet bulldog. I am such a sucker for – as long as they're being treated well, and I assume they are, I'm such a sucker for the college team that has – a mascot that's an animal, and then as long as the animal is not like a wild animal that you're making its life miserable, but like a bull, like a cute bulldog sitting there on the sideline, or the Huskies have a husky used to be named Sun Dodger. I think it's like son of Sun Dodger now or something. You know, like we're but like but you bring out the real animal, and then for the mascot you just shake up the Etch-a-Sketch. Just go with something totally different.
Mm.
Go. I just all I'm saying is like. There's
Go
a reason.
Peanuts,
it's not that hard.
Right? Georgia peanuts. That's, that'd be good.
Yep, exactly. As drawn by Charles Schulz.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, I was saying before, like last week, I was narrating how I was kind of back and forthing with the producers about my Woodstock piece. I was actually really happy with how it turned out and what they left in. So I retract my initial skepticism of that piece and how it was going to come out. It was actually kind of fun. And anyway, but I just think here's all I'm trying to say. It's not that hard to figure out what mascots are fun and interesting and which ones aren't. I don't understand why teams continue to churn out buff mascots that are doing feats of strength. I will trade 100 San Diego Charger Lightning Bolt guys who are being blown out of cannons. Actually, that's kind of bitchy.
That's awesome. What? Yeah, tell me more about this. I'm into it.
Okay, fine. A bad example. But I will trade all of them for – like if you're designing a new mascot, just make it – silly, and that's going to be fun, and people are going to like it. I don't want the moose doing push-ups on top of the dugout.
Yeah.
I want – it's like – it's not – I don't need a demonstration of strength and cool – I don't need badassery from the mascot of my team is, I guess, what I'm trying to say in a very overly verbose way.
Or lean on the idea of like a Native American trope in some way. I feel like there's a lot of fertile ground there that hasn't been fully explored.
Would you like to explore that more deeply right now, Andrew, while I sit quietly?
You know what? Would you give me one day to get my thoughts in order on that? Wait, you know what? I'll present them at the Thing Festival, segment one in the books.
Yeah, down the whole bottle of Jim Beam before you do that.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL? The newsletter? because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right. How about a couple of little email and V-mail related events?
Email. Every week I'll get it from a female.
Oh, why are you laughing at that?
I have a couple of email and V-mail related events. I like the way
Here's why I said it that mm-hmm. weird way. Because this is neither email nor V-mail, but I got something cool in the real mail, in the R mail. So this is email, V-mail, and R mail. I got something in the mail that I wanted to talk about because it's pretty cool, actually. It's from a listener.
You got
it's from listener Michael.
It arrived.
I got it, buddy.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I got it, buddy. And it is a sound machine, the kind that I use on the show every single day, except for today. Ironically, I hadn't used it yet today. But I have been complaining about how this sound machine, this little red silly device I got that my brother David got for me at some point, that I have it in my backpack when I'm traveling, and it keeps going off, and it keeps just playing embarrassing, like, things coming out of my backpack as I'm, like, getting it down from the overhead on the plane. Listener Michael sent me a sound machine. Now, Andrew, I'm going to play you. This is the sound machine listener Michael sent me. And now I've changed something on it, and I'm pressing the same fart button, and nothing is happening. Why? Because now I've switched it back on. Listener Michael put an on-off switch on it. He says, "Dear Luke, I hope you enjoy this modified sound effect machine. If you're facing the buttons, then the left switch position is off and the right switch position is on." I appreciate the detail. I feel like I would have been able to figure it out. It's a fairly simple test to run.
He's following the Rolling Stones rider.
Yeah, exactly. This is off. But again, I mean, Michael has been so kind so as to buy this thing, hack it for me, and then send it to me, and then explain it. So I don't mean to be ungrateful. Anyway, Michael says, "If you happen to forget to turn it off, it does not use any additional power. The off switch just keeps it from making noise when buttons are pressed." Listener Michael in Alameda, California. Michael,
that's so awesome.
Thank you so much. This is so cool. I'm stoked about this.
By the way, the reason I said you got it was because he had also emailed me a photo of it as well. So I knew it was coming. And he's, you know, it's exactly like, you know, it's like the size of a deck of cards about, right, Luke? It's a small little handheld device.
Yeah.
And he showed the picture of the black switch that he installed. I mean, he totally, literally hacked this thing. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm not exactly thrilled with. I want to do another one that looks a little smoother and cleaner. I was just kind of learning how to do it on this one."
Looks pretty smooth and clean to me.
I know. I'm like, what do you want? You want to have fingerprint sensor on-off switch? Like, it's so awesome.
Would it kill you, Michael, to put some fingerprint ID on this?
Face recognition.
No, it's got two little nice little screws on top now, putting it all back together. It's got this switch. This is great because I'm very into I'm also very into duplicating your investigation, Andrew. No, I'm very into like having my go bag, my road kit. And so I have, you know, like a bell that I keep mostly in my backpack now. I have cables for the broadcast. I have a microphone that I just take because I'm traveling so much now that I don't like to have to disassemble and put together my whole kit and then, because I always feel like I'm going to forget something. Anyway, this means I now have my Rode sound machine that I can also turn off. And by the way, this is me playing that with it turned off. thanks to listener Michael.
I hear the difference.
This is amazing.
I hear the difference.
Yeah. Did you hear that? Were you able to hear it?
Yeah. I'm very envious also of Michael just being able to like get in there and do that.
I
wish
know.
I knew how. Of course, I'm sure.
I don't even want to know how many Bothans had to die for this to happen, but it's cool.
Hey, let me read to you an email of interest, if you'll allow it. This is you might.
I have email-related events, and you have emails of interest.
This is a this is some intelligence for your Tesh. I was talking about John Tesh on the show the other day because I've been listening to a lot of old-timey radio on Kixie Radio here in town, and they still play Intelligence for Your Life, hosted by John Tesh. And I think that you had mentioned, Luke, that you – what was your story? You had met him briefly or something, and he seemed like legitimately –
I didn't meet him,
like,
but I heard a great radio piece about him because of the – it was an explanation of – and again, I've been saying it's Studio 360, so I sure hope I'm right about that. But it was a piece about how those PBS – PBS telethons with the like Yanni live concert and the John Tesh live concert, how that sort of came about and the surprising story behind it. And they interviewed John Tesh and he was just wonderful and delightful in the interview. And it honestly made me like him so much more as a person that I then, when I've heard Intelligence for Your Life since then, I've been totally in. I'm in for it.
Well, this is from listener Michael, who claims to be live from Red Rocks. And hey, I believe it.
Oh.
He says, in either 1988 or 89, I spent 2 or 3 days with John Tesh at a trade
Whoa.
Show. I was working for an apparel company who had recently decided to hop onto the burgeoning mountain biking boom. We were exhibiting our bikes at a trade show, and we shared the booth with John and his partner, Bob Gura. It might not be Bob, he says, but somebody Gura. They had an activewear line called, wait for it, Tesh and Gura. One of them knew someone at the company I worked for, and they worked out an arrangement to be in our booth and show their line of goods. John seemed smart, fun, and self-aware. This was probably mid-Entertainment Tonight, so he was already a big celebrity, but he didn't have an attitude. He seemed to like he was generally having a good time, just hanging out with a handful of dudes, making the best of an event that can be boring and exhausting. So, Luke, the positive vibe you got from the interview you heard checks out. Power out, Michael.
Nice.
I love that. I always love.
I love
I
that John Tesh was on his grind. So he's like
yeah.
mid Entertainment Tonight.
Yeah.
But he's also out there. He's really out there selling mountain biking equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm really psyched about it, too. And I you know me, I'm such a sucker for a celebrity just being cool and not acting like they're above everything. So I love it.
Cool. Anything else? I have an update from listener Jamie about the Faye Webster show.
Oh, I saw that came in, but I didn't get the chance to read it yet. Good
she said, time. Thank you so much for the shout out. Cause our listener Jamie had I'm going to probably say my favorite singer right now. The singer I listen to the most would be Faye Webster. She said we had an enthusiastic capacity, actually over capacity crowd. The show was amazing. Faye and the band are just as awesome as you would hope, on stage and off. We partied all
Real
night.
Teshes.
If you consider ice cream at midnight partying all night. And she said, can we just declare Pigeon the song of the summer?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
Well, that was easy.
Why
the easiest song of the summer we've ever
like
done.
It's been so tough in previous years.
Yeah, no, boy, that worked itself out. So there's the update on that, too. Anything else?
Well, sure. I'll share this last one. I was wondering if I should save this for another day because do you remember we got a voicemail from somebody? I don't think she left her name on the voicemail, but she does identify herself as Abony here, if I'm saying that name correctly. Hmm. Is that how you pronounce it? A-B-O-N-Y?
Sure, I've never seen that name before, but that's how I would say it.
She is the person who left us a voicemail. We were playing a lot of voicemails about various conflicts listeners found
yes.
themselves in. And she has a kid who goes to a preschool. And when she goes to pick up her kid,
right.
she sees that a couple of the school buses are parked in disabled spots. And there's one person, like a parent, who waits to pick up their kid and just sits in one of the spots. So there's like 4 spots, but like 2 of them are taken up by buses. One is taken up by somebody who's in the car leaving it idled, not parking there, but sitting there and then only leaving one disabled parking spot. And we, I believe, had some questions about how she wanted to either tell the police officer who kind of just manages security outside the school and ask him if he might step in to talk to the person who's idling in one of these spots. Also, she had concerns about the buses there. And I think she said maybe I should talk to the administration about it. And so we talked about that on the show. And this is what she ended up doing. I heard my voicemail pop up and I wanted to give you an update. I was the parent who wanted to snitch on school buses and others misusing the disabled parking at my kid's preschool. Thought Luke's advice was perfect. Well, you know, she wrote Luke. I think she meant Andrew there. I thought Andrew's advice was perfect. And so I spoke to the director about both the bus and the parent, and her response completely disarmed me. Andrew, you were absolutely right. You know, this time she got it right. Andrew, you were absolutely right that the school had more disabled spots than what is actually required by law. And then one additional wrinkle is that I didn't realize at the time that there are children with disabilities who ride that bus. And it helps the director to have the buses parked close to the center to keep all the students safe when entering and exiting the school. So that's interesting. Like, yeah, the school bus doesn't maybe have the traditional placard, but it is, you know, it is supposed to be parking there for its intended purpose. She was also aware of the parent who idled and told me that she would speak with him. Since then, I haven't seen him idling in the spot anymore. And he hasn't given me any dirty looks, so I don't think he knows that I was the snitch. Which is great. The lesson here is unsurprising but powerful. An uncomfortable but not dangerous situation is best handled directly, or failing that, by snitching to someone other than the police. Power out, Ebony.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good outcome to that, because the bus, you know, bus makes sense in there. Mm-hmm. And the person who's idling in there probably didn't real, like, again, I said this when we initially played the voicemail, but I would imagine the parent probably kind of thought, well, I'll just move my car if somebody looks like they need it. They hadn't really fully thought it through, and a gentle reminder from the administration that that's not really allowed, and they're just going to have to park a little further away. So you got the bus is going to stay, but the idling parent is going to not, and that's probably a good way for this thing to work itself out.
Yeah, that's really good. So I'm glad I was so right about everything.
Yeah, once again,
it just feels good.
I wrote down Romeo and Juliet. Romeo and Juliet, Romeo N apostrophe N Juliet, and then hands off my cleanup dogs.
Oh, that's probably better. We could also say intelligence for your Tesh, but I think that's very specific, and people might think that John Tesh was on the show today, which he is not. Although,
no, you don't want to overpromise that. Dude, I mean, I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility.
That would be a great Friday friendo. Like, I know that he has some sort of connection to Kixie here in town. Like, he's doing, like, you know, spots for him and stuff. I mean, he's getting paid. Don't get me wrong. We're not going to pay to have John Tesh on the show, are we? Can you put that in our writer? We need John Tesh in the green room so that he can walk out on stage with us for an interview.
Yeah.
It's a new
Okay, I'm
going to
start following
booking.
Him on Twitter, okay. Which I'm sure will be the first step in a burgeoning friendship between us and the Tesh.
This could be really cool. He would be a great guest. It's everything we've
really
heard about
would,
him,
honestly.
He would be amazing. Yeah.
We can ask him how the mountain bike apparel company is going.
That's right.
What if that's the whole interview?
Tesh
we
Gura.
Literally don't we don't we don't mention intelligence for your life. We don't mention his music career. We don't mention any of the things that people interview about. It's just a deep dive on Tesh and Gura and what went wrong. In fact, now we're just doing Lauren Ober's show.
Well, what?
And I'm also assuming it went wrong. I'm assuming it's not some huge going concern.
What if we try to? What if we contact John Tesh only to ask him if he's got Bob Gura's number, because we're trying to reach Bob Gura to talk about the clothing line.
We get him on the show, and then that's what we ask.
We just ask him all about Bob Gura.
Or what on the show, do you have Bob Gura's contact info?
What's he like to work with? We hear Bob Gura is like a really down to earth guy. Is that true?
Yeah. Now, okay. I guess there's a new. I'm deep diving on intelligence for your life by way of the Tesh Twitter feed. I'm wondering if this is really John Tesh or if this is just somebody that works for the show. Because I need to get straight to the Tesh.
Yeah.
I don't need to be futzing around.
Mm-hmm.
There's somebody named Gib Gerard that's also part of the show. I think they've spun this off into TV as well.
Oh, okay.
But it's a lot of intelligence. There's a lot of heavy lifting on the intelligence front for just John Tesh and Connie Selica. So they've had to bring in Gib Gerard as well to help share the load.
How about teshing your patience?
That opens up a whole lot of That opens up a whole lot of avenues if we just use Tesh in lieu of test.
Yeah,
stress
right?
Tesh.
Yeah. Standardized Tesh.
Teaching to the Tesh. I mean, that's the whole problem right now is everybody's teaching to the Tesh.
The problem is we have too many good spoofs.
Yeah. What do you want to go with?
Let's just go with teaching to the Tesh. I like how forced it is.
Forced?
No, the joke is good, but the fact that, like, we didn't really have any good show titles, so we just started, like, coming up with show titles at the end, and we're just pretending like it was organic.
Yeah, but we've done that before and had way worse outcomes than teaching to the Tesh.
Oh, definitely.
I was going to play the ending music from here, but you've pointed out that I have kind of a janky recording. So would you?
I didn't
mind
do it. I want the listeners to know I didn't say that in a hurtful way.
Not in a hurtful way at all. You were just curious. But now, what that's done to my brain is it's told me that your version of the song is the preferred one. So which is fine. Mm-hmm. For so many reasons, including the fact that I don't even have to stick around until the music comes.
That's what this is really about. Going to go
exactly.
Eat.
I can go get more coffee. All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. We are going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Let me just say, on Wednesday, we've got some special stuff coming your way. I don't know if I'm over or under promoting the Wednesday plan, but I'm excited about it. I hope you are, Andrew.
I am very excited about it. Let's just put it this way. You're going to start to see some more bonus episodes in your feed starting this Wednesday. And I think we've already said what we're doing, so I don't know why we're being coy about it now. But
because I forget what we have said and haven't said. Yeah, we're doing our Patriot podcast.
Right.
Hot on the heels of the announcement that the Patriot is not being renewed
season. We were waiting for the cancellation notice to start our episode by episode.
We had to
recap.
Make sure that the show we were talking about has literally no future.
Yes,
and,
too beautiful
and
to
we
live.
Were able to do that. So starting Wednesday, we're going to launch McMillan Men, which is our show about the wonderful and interesting TV show Patriot. We're going to go one episode a week. We're going to watch the show. If you have, it's an Amazon show, so I guess you have to sign up for Amazon. So you win again, Bezos. That's going to be where McMillan Men is going to launch on Wednesday. So if you're looking for something to watch, start watching Patriot. And we're going to be talking about episode one of Patriot on this special show that launches on Wednesday.
It's so good. If you get to see it, I know you're going to get obsessed with it. Also, I kind of love the fact that we're called Too Beautiful to Live, and we should just always from now on just do recap shows of shows that were just too beautiful to live.
Yep. Next up, Cop Rock.
We're coming for you, Botchko.
All right. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.